Hello to our amazing community. So I wanted to jump in here and actually just record a quick introduction of my own before you will see this introduction for our podcast itself. And this introduction really involves me sharing a little bit about, you know, my intentions behind this. And I would love to hear your feedback, your ideas. Of course, everybody in here helps to make the school what it is. But what I really wanted to share here with you is that we are going to be hopefully hosting a regular episode with Dr. Nara Simmons, who is a naturopathic doctor from Canada, but who does all sorts of work online with different clients and patients. And the intention of this is, you know, I know right now that our different healthcare systems are overloaded at times in a lot of different ways. And I also recognize that sometimes, you know, healthcare can be really effective in the Western world for allopathic forms of medicine, but sometimes can not really help us identify root cause and, you know, have preventative and proactive methods for treating our health. And this is something that the world of naturopathic medicine that I've sort of been researching and dipping my toes into, learning more about through wonderful people like Dr. Nara herself, has really introduced me to and really made me feel excited and inspired about. So what you're going to see is that we are going to be adding a feature to PDS where we will have a conversation once a month. Hopefully we can even, you know, build some momentum around it if we get lots of good feedback from you guys, and maybe do it bi-weekly, maybe even have Dr. Nara come in and host her own episodes of PDS, but really go through and do a deep dive into understanding different components of our physical body and health. I think that we ideally could have a user manual for, you know, understanding our subconscious mind and all the empowerment that brings, but then also understanding our body's internal systems, like what promotes gut health, what promotes thyroid health, how do we support our liver and our kidneys and detoxing, you know, all these really interesting topics. So I've been personally researching about this a lot the past couple of years. I'm super passionate about all of this and really wanted to share some of these resources with you guys, like the wonderful Dr. Nara, who you're going to meet today, who I recorded this podcast episode with, to host inside of the school, to share some extra insight and information. And I'm really excited to hear your guys' feedback, and I hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School Wellness Podcast. I am so excited to introduce a special guest for today, Dr. Nara Simmons. Dr. Nara has worked for 20 years in the natural food and supplements business. While completing her science degree and working at the Root Cellar in Prince Edward Island, she met many patients who she helped through her sister's naturopathic practice, and it then inspired her to further her education and become a naturopathic doctor herself. She's passionate about understanding how our bodies work and respond to ever-changing environments and how to translate that into helping people live their best lives. Dr. Nara says she loves to nerd out about nutritional biochemistry thanks to her high school chemistry teacher who made her love chemistry early on. And she does what she does because of her beautiful mother. She's grateful for her two boys and her partner who teach her every day how to be a better teacher. Her other loves are coffee, rebounding, on my belly con, traveling, hiking, photography, and being with the people she loves. So I love that we have a really personal introduction, and I can't wait for everybody to meet you, because as many students in our program will find out, you've helped me so much on my journey, and my sister especially, who went through a lot of big health challenges over the past year. And I just think you're like an encyclopedia of information and knowledge, and just a really supportive and kind person to work with. And so I'm so excited to bring a lot of this knowledge and information to our members today. So I wanted to start and just ask you a little bit about what got you interested. I mean, I know you shared it a little bit in your bio, but just what got you interested in this journey? Was it really like being there and seeing people through their struggles and then just deciding this is so interesting to me, or how did it really sort of evolve?
Well, honestly, I grew up this way. I've lived this my entire life. I literally grew up with a mom who was way ahead of her time. You know, she was the one talking about plastic and how we needed to always use glass. And she was reading Adele Davis and Linus Pauling. And, you know, as a child, you know, she's like, she's telling me what Linus Pauling is saying about how much vitamin C we should all get. And it was kind of all we ever knew as kids, is this is the way, you know, my sister, my two brothers were raised, was, you know, with, you know, the best possible food and, you know, being aware of what nutrients we needed, or maybe we were lacking in terms of why we were getting sick or not feeling well. And So it's just kind of, it's all I've known in a way. And so it was actually my mother who suggested to my sister who wanted to go into medicine. And she said, well, what about naturopathic medicine? And so my sister became a naturopathic doctor, and she came back to PEI after she finished school, and she bought the root cellar. And I was doing my undergrad in biology at the time and got a part-time job at the store that we had shopped at with my mom as kids. So it was kind of full circle, right? That my sister was buying this health food store we'd shopped at with my mom. Wow. And I just threw, like I said in my bio, my exposure through the root cellar to her patients, you know, what they were learning from her. And I just kind of had this thirst for more knowledge. I thought, I want to do the same thing. I want more. I just love learning about the body, and I find it so fascinating that I never get sick of it. I just love learning about the connections, right? And there's actually so much that we can do. That's the thing, is once we learn about our bodies, that we realize that we've got so much power in our own hands, right? To find health and find optimal health, right? Not just, you know, okay.
Absolutely. But
yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And so what would you say, like, you know, going through this journey, what would you say some of the most important building blocks were of learning about health, like the most overlooked components of sort of medicine as it is, and things that are really important if we're sort of tackling a health journey, going through any health challenges, or just interested in fine tuning our health and our body systems?
Well, one thing I'm really seeing a lot of lately is there's a real kind of disconnect in terms of what's happened to our food supply. So, you know, the quality of our food and how it's been changed from even, let's say, what our grandparents ate, right? And I think there's an inherent trust that if it's available at the grocery store, it must be safe and it must be okay for us, right? When in reality, so many of the foods that people are consuming too much of are actually causing a lot of their issues. And if we could just, you know, create more awareness of, you know, people knowing what to choose at the grocery store, that is really the first most important step. And I notice, you know, even when I do an intake with people, is that, you know, there's often people will say, oh, I eat healthy, I eat really well. And it's not until maybe we actually look at the actual wrapper of that food, I'll say, well, which one? But tell me which cracker you eat, you know? And I pull up the nutritional information and show them the ingredients and go over the nutrition facts. And all of a sudden, it becomes this like window into, you know, what might be kind of going wrong or contributing to poor health when we could have otherwise sort of really glossed over it and gone, oh, well, that sounds like at face value, like
it's okay.
Yeah.
Which is healthy in the box. And I remember personally when I was starting this like really big gut health journey that I was on, and I cut all sugars out, and I cut yeast, and I cut anything gluten related. And the shocking thing for me is all these things that were like healthy snacks that I was eating. Yes. Sugars in everything. Like it's so hard until you're actually, instead of looking at calories, it's like, no, look at the ingredients and eat for your health. Yes. And that was a huge wake up call. So I can only imagine how many people you see coming through the doors that have those experiences.
Well, and I think sugar is a really important one that you touch on, because no one, I don't think, ever tells anybody through, you know, your school years, well, how much sugar is okay to consume and how much is going to start to become a problem, right? In terms of your gut health or your mood or all kinds of, you know, different aspects of your health. But nobody, I don't think, really knows that. Most people in the population don't know what is kind of a maximum amount of sugar they should consume, right? And I see this especially with kids, because, you know, with my own kids, I notice that they're constantly being offered sugar and everything, right? And if I were to just allow it and say yes, or just even, you know, simply maybe not be paying attention that closely, which is really easy to do. I totally get it as a parent, right? You know, if you're not kind of sitting there going, okay, you've had this, and then you had this earlier, and okay, you know, what are we up to today? Like, that's probably enough for today. Kids are consuming like an incredible amount of sugar, you know, way, way higher than they should be. And I think often if it's happening with kids, it's maybe because overall in the home, there is that level of consumption, right? And it really kind of can get lost, right? Just how much is being consumed. If you're not specifically looking at those labels and tuning into what you've had in the run of a day, or even I like to say with my own kids, reflect on the week, right? Is to say, okay, well, you know, we had a birthday party this week, and then we had this treat this night, and there's been kind of more sugar this week. And, you know, let's just kind of notice how your body's feeling. And, you know, now my kids who are, you know, they're 3 and 9, and both of them will say, you know, mama, my nose is snotty. I think I had too much sugar yesterday.
Oh, sweet. And if people are hearing this, what would you say like the most important food groups are to pay attention to? Like, what are the problematic? Obviously it's different for each individual, but what are the main sort of focuses, would you say?
You know what? There is differences for individuals, but I will say across the board, I've been practicing 12 years and I still see this every day, is the things that people are consuming the most of tend to be wheat-based products. So bread, pasta, crackers, tortilla wraps, and then dairy products, sugar, and then alcohol. Those really are the things that people are consuming the most of, and they tend to be the most problematic. And it sounds so simple, but you know, 12 years later, I'm still recommending that to people coming in when they say, you know, I have gas all the time, or I'm always bloated, or my bowels are irregular. You know, sometimes they're loose and sometimes I'm constipated and it's, you know, seems to be all over the place. Is that's typically where I start, is with those four things.
Yeah. Like telling me, hey, I'm not okay. And I think it's funny because I remember myself like dating back years ago, you know, if my body was giving me feedback about things, I was like, oh, my stomach's upset today. Or, oh, you know, and we write things off so easily, but it's like, hey, like your body's communicating to you. And these are not random things that are happening.
Yeah.
So getting into relationship with your body that way, at least for myself, has been so beautiful. Yes. I'm like, oh, if I'm not feeling 100%, or if I wake up like stuffier than usual or something, I'm like, oh, what did I eat yesterday? You know, what's my body responding to? And it helps you sort of get in relationship that way. Now, when you look at like people's health and well-being, and let's say you go through intake, what are the big like systems in a person's body that you tend to focus in on? Are you looking at like their gut, their thyroid, their liver? Like, where do you sort of start generally?
Yeah, absolutely. Their gut is a huge one. And that's connected to the, you know, the whole diet conversation, but also, you know, we are a culture of, you know, kind of antacids and acid blockers and lots of antibiotics. And then, you know, if a person was born by C-section, they didn't get that initial good bacteria from their mother's birth canal. And, you know, if you weren't breastfed, then you didn't get good bacteria there either. So for some people, it's actually something that's, you know, been there since childhood. And then it's maybe gotten compounded by, you know, too many antibiotics. Maybe later in life, as they got older, they had heartburn and they went on acid blockers. And then with the awareness of, you know, sugar being not the best thing for us, and as people are trying to do better, a lot of people have moved towards artificial sweeteners. And so even those have been found to negatively impact our gut bacteria, which are so important for not only our digestive health, but our immune health. And so it's really kind of just the perfect storm of all of these different factors, right, coming together. And it just, we get to the point where it becomes too much, right? And our body can no longer compensate for it.
Yeah. Something that was so interesting to me that I learned about is like, I was born from a C-section, and I was thinking like, That sounds like such a small thing, but like the exposure to bacteria, the proper bacteria that early is so important. So when we look at that sort of trajectory, what can people do if they're struggling? So let's, I guess, reeling it back first, like what would symptoms be that people may be experiencing if they're having gut health challenges?
So gas and bloating, for example, we've kind of tended to normalize that as a society, right? It's like, you know, jokes about your spouse like farting and ha ha ha. It's so funny, but it's actually not normal. I say this every day in practice. Common does not equal normal, right? In medicine, those two are not synonymous. So just because there's lots of people around you who complain of the same things, it doesn't mean it's normal. In a digestive system that is functioning optimally, we shouldn't have really much gas or bloating unless you're consuming, let's say, something like a big meal of beans, and maybe you don't consume beans very often, right? They can naturally be more gas producing, or, you know, there's other things like that are commonly gas producing, like turnip, for example, a lot of people will have trouble with, or turkey.
Because of the lectins in those foods, is that really what it sort of boils down to?
It can be for some things. Yeah. For example, the beans, but I would say overall on the whole, you know, you should not be having gas on a regular basis and you shouldn't be feeling bloated. And that's the bloating is one that's really interesting to me because some people come in and they say, oh, I'm bloated all the time. I feel like I'm pregnant. So that's one end of the extreme, which is not normal.
It's normalized. It's like, oh, you know, you're just bloated. It's fine. That's how it is. But that's your body, like giving you feedback again.
Exactly. But then it's interesting to me, there is another end of the spectrum where I have people say they're not bloated, but I can see it. I can tell by looking at them that they are bloated. So I think there's also been a normalization on that end of the spectrum where people just think, well, this is my body. This is just, I was born this way. This is how my stomach is. Because I have people, you know, tell me this, they come back after a month of no wheat, no dairy, no sugar, no alcohol. And they come back and they go, oh my gosh, my stomach is flat. I didn't even realize I was bloated. Wow. So there's kind of, there's two ends of the spectrum there, I find. But those would definitely be things to watch for. The other really big one that's become normalized is constipation. So, you know, if you take the traditional definition of constipation, it's considered to be, if you have less than 2 to 3 bowel movements a week, would be considered that someone's constipated. I would define constipation as anything less than a bowel movement every day.
Yeah.
Every single day. And the only exception would be if, you know, you had been ill, you know, if you had a stomach flu and you're literally not eating or you'd had an extended period of fasting. So if there's less coming in, then yes, less is going to come out. But otherwise, you know, if you're eating 2 to 3 meals every day, you should be having a bowel movement every day. And there also shouldn't be any straining. It should not be an effort. It should actually pass with ease. And then the volume is really important. So, you know, that doesn't always get discussed. You know, some people will say, you know, I have a bowel movement every day. And for one reason or another, they end up in a merge, maybe for something else, they end up having a bowel x-ray. And we see on their bowel x-ray that they're actually full of stool. And this, I've seen this many times over where people are reporting that they actually have a bowel movement every day. And so it can be deceiving even when it is happening every day. We still want to look at the volume that's being passed, right? And whether there's a sense of kind of relief and feeling of eliminating everything that there was to eliminate. And then also that gas and bloating, because sometimes the gas and bloating is reflective of not fully eliminating, right? And when we're not fully eliminating, we can see an uptick in the growth of certain types of bacteria that are going to increase the amount of gas that we have. And then that causes the bloating.
And then if it's extended, like if gut health becomes, you know, something somebody has a problem with, and it sort of continues for years and years. Does that evolve? Like, I know for myself, when I sort of started my journey, I felt like I had the flu. Like, I was having like sweats at night, and I was having, you know, all these sorts of like strange things, like a lot of fatigue, feeling really like brain foggy in the morning. Are those, I mean, I'm sure those can be related to many things, but are in more extreme cases, like what do you tend to see in terms of people's gut health?
So some people can feel like really very unwell with SIBO. So small intestinal bacterial overgrowth is something that is becoming more and more commonly diagnosed. And so some people can feel, you know, very, very unwell with that. And then of course, you know, we've got Crohn's and colitis on, you know, the other end of the spectrum. And, you know, sometimes those diagnoses can be, you know, surprising that they're not always following kind of the classical presentation, right? And then certainly, I know one of the things I'm seeing a lot of is because our healthcare system is so overwhelmed right now, and has been for quite some time, but it's sort of reaching a peak, is that a lot of people can't get, you know, diagnostic things done in a timely manner. So they're maybe waiting a really long time to get diagnosed with something like Crohn's or colitis. But yeah, those would be some of the kind of more extreme things that I see digestively. Now, that raises a really interesting point, because I've also seen people who, you know, I thought they were presenting in such a way that even I myself thought there must be something more serious going on here, you know, just because of their degree of pain and discomfort and how intense it was, you know, from day to day. And what's been interesting to see is that sometimes some of those cases still actually come back to the wheat and dairy and sugar and alcohol issue. And they are just, you know, they are either consuming such a volume of it, or, you know, like we said, they had a kind of a susceptibility to gut issues because of their past history, right? Because they, you know, maybe were born by C-section, weren't breastfed, had a lot of antibiotics through childhood, had those acid blockers, just had one thing after another, right? Kind of pushing their digestive system in the wrong direction. That it's just kind of reached that perfect storm. And so sometimes the cases that we think maybe must be something bigger are sometimes actually fairly simple to resolve.
It's changing how you're eating, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what, like, so if somebody's looking or listening to this right now and they're going, okay, you know, I have some of these symptoms and I had normalized them and I thought, you know, oh, this is just how my body is. Where do you start with people? Like, if you had to reflect sort of like a protocol, like, is it an elimination diet and then certain supplements, or what do you sort of tend to recommend?
So, I definitely do a lot of the elimination diet. So, you know, specifically, I usually go with a month at least, in terms of no wheat, dairy, sugar, alcohol. And that's for a few reasons. One of the reasons is that our immune system is producing antibodies, you know, against wheat and dairy. And in order for us to have enough time for the liver to clear out those antibodies that have been formed, that can take, you know, 30 days, for example. So you may be just starting to kind of see, you know, the full effect, or starting to get to the full effect at that month mark. And also just through trial and error, when I've had people do shorter ones, like a week or 2 weeks, it's not that they don't see improvement, because a lot do, but for some, they need a longer period of time to kind of see the full effect of what's the changes that are going to occur in their digestive system may just take longer. But that's one place that I definitely start. And then again, kind of looking back at their past history. So if they have had a lot of antibiotics or acid blockers, or, you know, they're a regular consumer of diet pop, and, you know, they're getting that aspartame on a regular basis, then I would be doing a probiotic Another common thing that I see is that there is, you know, candida overgrowth, you know, and so for each person that can manifest differently, it's not always kind of the stereotypical vaginal yeast infection. I see a lot of women that can actually get chronic bladder infections, and it's due to candida. But it can present in the same way as, you know, the typical E. coli caused bladder infection, you know, with urgency. And
just in case anybody doesn't know what candida overgrowth is, who's listening, will you explain a little bit about what that is and how that would present itself as well?
So candida is one specific species of yeast. And so yeast, like another major group of microorganisms, you know, we've got bacteria, we've got parasites, and we've got yeast. And so candida is one of the most common that will tend to get overgrown. So it's normal in our digestive tract. It's normal to have, you know, different types of yeast on our skin. The problem becomes when they get overgrown, much like when different types of bacteria get overgrown. There is a kind of a symbiosis that occurs in terms of all these different organisms living together, right, and coexisting. But it's when that imbalance happens and, you know, we see something like candida getting overgrown. And what tends to cause that? Sugar. So not only refined sugar, but just having excessive kind of carbohydrate consumption in the form of like breads and pastas and things like that, because the flour is ultimately broken down into sugar, and that's what feeds yeast or candida. And then we have all these other things that tend to promote the growth of candida. So, you know, the antibiotics are one, the acid blockers, birth control is something for women that can contribute to candida overgrowth. Another one is steroids. So steroids, though they are effective at combating inflammation, they're immune suppressive and they can actually promote the growth. So, you know, if somebody's been on a steroid, then they're going to be more likely to, you know, be more vulnerable to having candida overgrowth. Diabetics, because their blood sugar is so poorly controlled, they are going to tend to be more at risk of having candida.
And is that because is that the blood sugar insulin or cortisol? How does that relate? I'm so curious.
So the sugar being high, so there being an excessive amount of sugar in the blood is kind of like, simply put, it's more food for those organisms to grow and multiply. And I always tell people to kind of observe. There's some really simple things you can observe. So somebody who has like dandruff in their scalp, right? They just tend to go get a shampoo and they don't really question why it's happening. But
that's feedback again,
right? But that's fungal overgrowth, you know, in your skin. A lot of eczema is actually fungal overgrowth. So, you know, you'll see people tend to get flaky skin in their eyebrows, and they may even experience that it's kind of, the skin is red and inflamed. That can often be fungal in nature. A lot of different skin rashes and skin conditions end up being fungal in nature. So that's one of the ways that it manifests, the bladder infection.
So sorry for interrupting you, but just, that's one of the things I love is like that, so much of like naturopathic medicine is not treating those things as symptoms, right? It's not treating it from a symptomatic approach. It's not going, which I absolutely see the value in so many things in traditional Western healthcare, but sometimes it's like, hey, you have a rash, and it's like, oh, here's a topical cream for your rash. And it's like, why do I have a rash? Like, what's that really telling me about my body and my personal experience and relationship to my body? And so it's so interesting to sort of hear all these different conditions, but please continue. So what other things might be linked to that?
So another really common one I see, and again, this is something we make a lot of jokes about, you know, like it's used in all kinds of comedy, but like when people have an itchy bum or an itchy rectum, that is often yeast overgrowth or fungal overgrowth. So that's one, right, that we tend to kind of like laugh off or, you know, say, ha-ha, oh yeah, my partner's always got their hand down their pants, right? That is often fungal overgrowth. And if you tune into it really carefully, you can actually see, you know, if I have just even a little bit of chocolate, and I would always pick dark chocolate, and it's way lower sugar than, you know, most of the other chocolates. And I still find, you know, if I have that a certain amount that I notice that, you know, that evening, if I pay attention for it, it's there. My scalp is itchy. You know, it's, I just kind of feel like my skin is itchy. And so that's a big one for people to watch out for. And sometimes, oftentimes that's getting misdiagnosed, right? It's like, oh, an allergy. I need to go take an antihistamine because my skin is itchy all the time, right? When it could possibly be, I'm not saying it always is, but often can be fungal overgrowth or candida overgrowth.
Okay. So I want to share something and hopefully it helps people who are listening from sort of a personal perspective. So I grew up with the worst allergies as a kid. I think I shared this with you before.
Yeah.
And like the worst, like I was like this allergy child. I had severe asthma. My parents thought I was going to be like the bubble kid kind of thing at a young age. And as I got older, like I played a lot of sports, and for some reason, I think that maybe like helped, I don't know, my lymphatic system or what happened, but I my allergies and asthma got like more under control. Yeah. And then when I started having gut health issues, this is years back now, but I started like realizing that when I would eat the wrong foods, as I was doing this big elimination diet, that I would get like allergies the next day. Like I would have like more of a runny nose or more of, and I still have like tiny allergies in allergy season, but I would have like severe, like sneezing nonstop or, you know, and what is happening there? Is that like gut permeability or, and like what's sort of taking place, and is that even linked, or was that just a hypothesis I made in my head?
No, it absolutely is linked. And I see it a lot. I see a lot of people who have seasonal allergies who from one year to the next can experience a very different kind of degree of symptoms. So, you know, one year they might have very mild symptoms and then another year they're really severe. Now, of course, we can question, and this is valid too, you know, how has kind of the air quality changed in terms of certain pollens and certain trees. And yes, there are legitimately years that are worse than others, but this is beyond that. Typically when people are consuming inflammatory foods and there's already more inflammation in the gut, and we have already been kind of triggering the immune system, and the immune system is on high alert. So, maybe I should back up for a second to just explain, because not everybody necessarily knows this, that the majority of our immune system is actually in our gut. And so when we ingest anything, whether it's food or drink, there is an interaction that's happening within our gut between that thing and our immune system. And so if we have been continually triggering our immune system with excessive consumption of wheat and dairy, for example, and there's already kind of this high degree of alertness, and there's been more inflammation, and then some of these foods can actually cause gut damage. And so a lot of people are familiar with the term leaky gut, or increased intestinal permeability is basically just describing that where there should be, no kind of gaps in the tissue, we end up with damage that allows food particles and things to pass through what would normally be a very tight barrier. And that's highly regulated, that the things going through that tissue surface are supposed to be more like vitamins and minerals and nutrients. So we shouldn't be having food going through, you know, that intestinal lining.
And then sort of going down this rabbit hole for a moment, what, you see so many autoimmune disorders with people nowadays. Like, it's just like autoimmunity is this new thing, and it seems to be happening to like so many people I know. And obviously there's a whole range of autoimmune problems and what gets, you know, characterized as autoimmunity. And do you think that there's possibly a relationship to the gut there as well, just in terms of like, if you're having disturbances there, and then like my imagination or my, I guess, own theorizing about this is sort of like, well, if my gut is permeable, and then if there's an imbalance of something going on in there, and then it's leaking out into my bloodstream, then maybe my body has an immune response attacking the foreign bodies or toxins, but it's then attacking itself and its own tissues. And maybe that's will you explain that if you don't mind?
So there absolutely is a connection in terms of, you know, what's happening in our gut, and in terms of this kind of increase in autoimmune conditions that we're seeing. And there are many, many different mechanisms to explain it. One, the one you just said, but you know, there are many other potential pathways through which it's happening, right? So for example, one, even the fact that when we damage the lining of the gut, we are then not as good at absorbing certain vitamins and minerals that are actually very key modulators of our immune system. So one in particular is vitamin D. So a lot of people, if the lining of their gut is damaged, they're not absorbing it very well. And so I'm seeing a lot of this in terms of when we actually do vitamin D testing, that the kind of the conventional recommendation, oh, everybody take 1,000 a day and you'll be good, is that it's not enough. Wow. And I actually see worse than that. I see people who are taking even 5 and 10,000 units a day, and they're not fully absorbing that. And they're still not at what we would consider to be an optimal level. So, so to suggest 1,000 is like, we're not even scratching the surface of what that person needs. Now, in a perfect...
Sorry. It's sort of putting everybody in a box. Like, I find that health is so personal, and it's not this one size fits all sort of dynamic. And so, you know, you recommend something or you hear the recommendation, and it's not considering all these different experiences people are having personally.
Yeah. I think it really just comes back to, you know, individualized medicine, which is one of the tenets of naturopathic medicine. It's one of the tenets on our oath that we swear, is that we swear to treat every person as an individual, you know, that we don't start putting people in boxes, right? Or that you give them the same protocol as someone else, that you really truly assess that person and that person as a whole. So everything from, you know, their family history, their previous past medical history, every single facet of their health, so that, you know, we're trying to put all the pieces of the puzzle together as best possible to come up with a plan that's going to prioritize, you know, what that person needs the most. I was just going to say, it kind of brings me to another thought, which I keep kind of every day thinking this a lot, is I think in one sense, it's amazing that we're in this era of information where it's so readily available online, right? And it's like, you can get so much information and quickly, you know, it's not like when I was a kid, I can remember actually looking in an encyclopedia, right, to look something up. So I really, you know, value that we can find so much information so quickly. But one thing I always remind people of is that what you are reading or listening to online is still a one-way conversation. Mm-hmm. That person that you're listening to is not talking to you specifically. They're giving, you know, general information, but it's why it's so important to work with somebody, I feel, is that you can have somebody really look at your case and your body and the whole picture of you and figure out what's going to be the priorities. Because if you continue to kind of listen to the information, which is endless, you know, you could easily convince yourself that you need 40 different supplements and
or that you're going to die in 2 days.
Yeah. That you know, this diet, no, it's this diet. And it really just depends on the individual, what is going to be the most important things for you and what's going to have the biggest impact for you. It's probably my biggest piece of advice is actually find a practitioner that you can work with, you know, a naturopathic doctor or an integrative medical doctor. I think ideally you want somebody who can actually do all of the things. And for me, that includes blood work and certain types of testing. And that's a really important piece. That's going to tend to be, you know, a doctor who's able to do that. So I'm not saying not to work with a nutritionist. Just saying that if you want to kind of be able to look at everything all together at once and put all the pieces together, then you can do that with a naturopathic doctor or, you know, a functional medicine doctor.
One of the things I loved, like coming to see you, is that you do a whole panel of everything, right? So you get to like, okay, I get to see what's going on inside of my body and all these sort of major things. And you took into consideration like family history and diet and how, mm-hmm. you know, born of a C-section and antibiotics and all these things. And it's sort of like you put this roadmap together of seeing like a holistic picture, which is really empowering, right? Because you start going, oh, like I'm really, it's almost like in what we do at the personal development school, so much about like, okay, well, in order to solve for something emotionally, you have to get really specific as to what it is. Like, and I'm always teaching people to boil things down and kind of like almost dissect our own thought processes and belief systems. And I think from this sort of health journey perspective as well, it's going, okay, how do I really look inward and understand like the holistic picture about my body and what's going on? And then sort of peel apart the things I need to tweak or change. And it's very personal, very specific. And I think that's really empowering for people. Now I have to ask you another question, because I'm so curious about this. That came up is in PDS, you know, we've got all these amazing, amazing students and people who are healing and growing. And we also have a lot of people who've been exposed to whether it's attachment trauma or just emotional trauma of different forms, of course, across the continuum, some people mm-hmm. not so severe, some people very severe.
Yeah.
When we talk about the gut, you know, and, you know, I know from a neurochemical perspective and psychologically, it's like, well, if we have a lot of trauma and we have a lot of, you know, painful thoughts and fears, you know, we've got greater cortisol responses and norepinephrine responses, and that can dysregulate our nervous system function. And so I'm curious, like, you know, do you find a lot of individuals that can be also a proponent or a component of what's taking place? Like maybe their environment's really stressful that they're living in, or what would you say about that?
100%. Absolutely. You know, and one thing that comes to mind right off the top is why some people might be constipated. So, you know, I have patients where it's like, you know, we might, for that particular individual, go through all the usual steps and not see anything budging, right? And sometimes what comes to light later, and this is also another reason why I recommend actually working with somebody, is because people are complex human beings, and it takes time to develop a relationship and trust somebody and maybe feel comfortable to share some of your past traumas, right? And that's not always going to come out on every, you know, first visit for each person, because they might not feel comfortable. And I understand that. And so I think the longer you work with someone, the deeper you get to go, right? And sometimes that ends up being one of the biggest, kind of impactors of someone's digestive health or another aspect of their health. There can be that sometimes almost it's like a physical holding on, right? Sometimes when people have emotional trauma that they haven't yet resolved, or, you know, there is something, you know, specific actually connected to, you know, when they would try to use the bathroom when they were a child, right? There may be negative memories attached to that. And maybe it is, like you said, it's more about, you know, adrenal dysfunction. And we see that, you know, that person is always kind of in adrenaline mode. And so the opposite signals are being sent to the body, right? That we are not in parasympathetic mode, which is rest and digest. We're actually in, like, you know, being chased by a bear. And so, no, that's not the time to have a bowel movement, right? It's when you're being chased by a bear. And yeah. if that's the way you live your life, that you're literally and physically always running, right? Then that can be sometimes part of it. I'm amazed by the complexity of our body. And sometimes we don't even get the absolute answer, you know, because testing can add up. And, you know, if you wanted to do every test there ever was, right, you could spend a lot of money, right? So sometimes it's actually through trial and error and someone's close observation of themselves, right? And kind of helping them to do that, to figure out, you know, more of a methodical way of observing yourself, right? And while, you know, still I can be the person who rules out these other possibilities, right? And make sure that we're still kind of ticking the boxes of, well, have we looked at all these other possibilities too? And just made sure that they might not also be contributing. And that is another thing, is that so oftentimes it's not just one cause, right? It's like, because our bodies are pretty resilient. They can actually compensate for a lot. So it is often when there's more than one thing, you know, kind of pushing us in a direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because I noticed like some symptoms can, you know, represent like, hey, there's a symptom here, but maybe it's actually a problem of your liver that's affecting your gut, or, you know, there can be these sort of yeah. different dynamics. So
yeah.
So with that being said, I know we're running out of time already, and I feel like this could be just a conversation I would love to have, you know, forever. But if, you know, I think a lot of our students will have so many questions and probably be able to relate to some of the different things you mentioned in terms of just yeah. different symptoms or experiences. And for future episodes, I'm going to ask people like what they would want to see and what they would want to hear and yeah. different topics they would want to touch on. But what would you recommend? Like, what are other cornerstones of health? So we have gut health that we got into a little bit today and could even yeah. do like a part two on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, other dynamics that are important to pay attention to in the body, yeah. what do you find to be those big cornerstones?
So definitely thyroid health is something that I see every single day in my practice. That's a really, really big one. So there's a huge subset of the population that has not ever been diagnosed. And that we can do through running a more comprehensive blood panel, right? So a lot of people, they're only getting the typical screening test done, and they're not getting, you know, the five other tests that we can do for thyroid. And that's where I see a lot of people show up. And sometimes that's because those markers are showing up sooner than the one that is typically tested. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I see people who have been diagnosed, but they are on a medication that is either not the right dose, not the right type for them, or there may be other adjunctive things that are going to be really important to work with the medication. And then another scenario I see is that people know that they're hypothyroid, but they've never actually had their antibodies tested. So they don't know that they have Hashimoto's, for example. And that's a whole other conversation, because there's a lot of things we can do for those antibodies being elevated. So thyroid is a really, really big one. And because the thyroid is kind of a master gland in the body, it impacts every other system. So it impacts our digestive system. It impacts our immune system, impacts our reproductive system. So, you know, for example, in women, whether they're having irregular periods or heavy periods, that can sometimes be a thyroid issue. So the thyroid is a really, really big fundamental one that, you know, we always want to make sure that is optimal, and it's changeable, right? Just because you had to test it at one moment in time, it doesn't mean that it hasn't gone off track since. And, you know, sometimes why it's going off track is actually due to cortisol or, you know, high stress, because that can have an impact on thyroid. So that would be one of the other really big things that I, you know, assess for and talk about every day. And then, you know, in terms of like symptoms, if I had to tell you the symptoms I see most often fatigue and anxiety. It's just like fatigue and anxiety, fatigue and anxiety. So that's where we really need to dig in and look at all the possibilities and have, you know, have somebody systematically go through, okay, have we looked at thyroid, you know, okay, we've looked at that. We've gone through kind of everything that we can check, you know, looking at cortisol. And then another one, this isn't really like a condition, but it leads to a lot of the common symptoms people have, is just checking blood work on a regular basis, right? So whether that's once a year, you know, depends on the test and depends on someone's history, what would be recommended. But let's say somebody's generally healthy and they don't even have any major complaints. I'm still a proponent of checking certain things once a year. To make sure that, for example, your vitamin D is optimal and your iron stores are optimal and your B12 is optimal. And hey, is there any sign that your thyroid might be starting to go in the wrong direction? And if it is, we can take action now and we can be proactive, right? So that maybe it doesn't get any worse.
Preventative. So you don't have to deal with all the like backlash of, oh, I didn't take care of it for long enough. And instead, like proactive, preventative. I love that. I think that's super important.
And yeah, I can't emphasize that enough. Like I can't speak to, you know, the American healthcare system, but I know what's happening in Canada right now is really, really concerning, you know, in terms of hospital capacity, you know, doctors and nurses leaving their positions because they are so burnt out, and our population is just getting sicker and sicker, with fewer and fewer people to care for them. And so we really, really need to take ownership of our health and consider it a really serious thing that, you know, one, if you have any symptoms at all, absolutely get on figuring out what's going on. But more than that is we really need to invest in prevention, because if our system is so overwhelmed, and people aren't investing in that prevention, then it's just kind of continuing the vicious cycle of there not being enough accessibility or services for people when they do, in fact, get seriously ill, right? You know, if somebody gets in a car accident or gets a cancer diagnosis, or, you know, the things that we want to be able to get in fast, right? And get treatment quickly if one of those things happens. So, you know, this stuff that we're talking about today with like digestive health and thyroid health, if people become more proactive, and try to feel as good as they can feel, then that will take the burden off the healthcare system. And so that when you need it for something really serious, it's going to be there.
Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah.
So if people want to learn more about you and, you know, how to work with you and sort of the different protocols you have, I mean, we'll put your website up, we'll put a link to your Instagram up. Yep. Where can they find you and can you work with people online and those sorts of things as well?
Yep. Yeah. So I do a lot of virtual consults, especially since the pandemic. So we can do video, or we can just even get on the phone if the internet connection's not great. I do a lot of phone calls as well. You can find me just going on my website. So it's www.simmonsmcmurr.com, or you can find me on Instagram, Dr. Nara Simmons. Those are the two best places to find me. And I would love to.
One other quick question about that. I'm so sorry. Is can, when that's happening, and can people do the testing with you as well online? Like they can, you can still get them organized to do tests in the US and Canada.
Yes. So definitely some of the labs that I would use for testing are actually based in the US. So in most cases, I would say I would be able to help somebody access where they could either pick up those kits at a local center, or oftentimes they can just have them shipped to their home, and they might be at home kits that they can do. So there's a lot of tests that we can do either through saliva collection or a simple like finger prick and a blood spot. So there's a lot somebody can do themselves from home with one of these kits.
Amazing. So
yeah.
Yeah. And were you going to share anything else before we jump off?
Yeah, I think probably just reiterating kind of the two messages I said about find somebody and stick with the process. You know, of course, we always have people we don't maybe click with or jive with. So I'm not suggesting, you know, that somebody continue on with someone that they really don't feel it's a click. But I guess more so what I'm saying is, you know, trust in the process, that it is a process and it's a journey. And, you know, I think we've become a real quick fix society where it's like one thing for this fixes this symptom, but real true health is a process and it can take time. And having somebody who has experience and knowledge and who can say, no, we've actually have given that thing enough time. And it's now I think it's time to try something else, or that's maybe not actually, you know, the priority thing we should be working on. And then, yeah, just don't wait because, you know, none of us know how much time we have really, you know. It sounds like depressing or ominous, but it's true, right? Is, you know, I think, why wouldn't you want to feel better now? You know, why? And I, what I imagine for myself, and I hope for everyone, is like to live into old age and feel as good as we can feel and still be doing, you know, all of our own things, right? Just like living in our own homes and cooking our own meals and doing our own laundry and
playing some golf maybe, or some tennis. And
yeah. And how that happens is through taking care of your body. You know, it's like, I know people say this a lot, but it's really true. I see a lot of people who take better care of like their cars or their lawnmowers or things like that than they do of their own actual body. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this has been amazing. I'm so excited, and I'm sure everybody's going to be so excited to hear future episodes, and I'm going to gather everybody's questions. So anybody who watches this, if you want to submit any questions you have in the comments below, or if you want to submit them into our info at personaldevelopmentschool.com inbox as well, we can organize those future questions for next episodes. And we'll definitely talk about thyroid, maybe a part two of gut health, maybe talk about the different major organs in our body, autoimmunity. Like, yeah, there's so many things we can probably cover. But we're just so excited to have you here, and thank you so much for being here today and for diving into all of this with me. And again, if you guys want to learn more about Dr. Nara or work with Dr. Nara, you can find her information below. And that's it for today. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Thais. My pleasure.